Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Are we getting Kofi Kingston versus Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania 35? I'm Ollie Davis, this is the other one, Luke Owen, and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble review of last night's Elimination Chamber. A review that I loved. No, not a review I loved, but I'm sure I will. A pay-per-view that I absolutely adored. I thought it was a terrific show all the way through. I'm just choosing to ignore that Baron Corbin-Braun Strowman match and that weird Lacey Evans thing. But apart from that, we have, I know you're going to say, oh, Finn Balor, Leo Rush, Bobby Lashley, but Finn Balor's the Intercontinental Champion now. I'm focusing on that result. I'm focusing on the Sasha Banks and Bayley becoming the inaugural women's tag team champions and the last 7 minutes of that match, rather than the iffy first 20 minutes. I think this was a great show.
I would agree with you. I thought that...
Why are you being so negative?
I thought that the opening chamber, particularly towards the end, was very good. Bit ropey at the start, but by the end, very good. And I thought the closing chamber was excellent.
Very good.
Absolutely
match.
Excellent. Probably one of the better chamber matches, if not possibly the best chamber match, because I thought the crowd was so good, and I thought the way they structured the match so well for the Kofi Kingston story, which I thought was just wonderful. However, I thought the stuff in between wasn't particularly great. Like, I thought the Miz Shane McMahon match was, like, good for a TV match. I thought the angle with Becky was awesome, but the match that came before it was pointless.
Well, it was never a match.
Well, then why do it?
It was always an angle.
Then why do it?
Because
why
you can't just have a wrestling
Ruby
angle.
Riot? And I thought the Braun Corbin thing.
Oh yeah.
Good. Like, that never ended. I'm pretty sure it's still happening.
That's objectively terrible. I think we can all agree that was bad.
And the Balor Bobby thing. I think I'm just bitter because I talked myself out of picking Balor to go with the win. Perhaps that's where I am. Also, like, yay Finn is champion. I could have sworn he'd won it previously, to be honest. But yay Finn is champion. But it's a belt that means nothing. And it feels like this. If we're going to be doing something with Balor as champion, we need to do something with him as champion. Like, I feel like I say this all the time. He needs to come out on Raw and issue the open challenge. Like, we need to get that ball rolling and just keep having really good... If this leads to great Finn Balor matches on TV every week, I'm all for it. But, like, what about the Intercontinental Championship has shown us over the last year that it means something?
Well, sometimes the man makes the belt. But we can say sometimes the chase makes the man in the case of Kofi. And
Segway.
This really was, that like Elimination Chamber really was about Kofi's story. As great as the Banks and Bayley moment was when they won the belt. And that really was a really nice bit. And we'll come on to that. For me, and I think for everyone else, it's this absolutely incredible Kofi Kingston comeback story. It's a difficult thing to say because it's not like he's gone away ever, and it's never like he was in the main event to begin with. So it's not a comeback story. It's just like late in his career, he's having a, what do you call it? Like a
career resurgence.
Yeah, career resurgence.
But it kind of is a comeback story at the same time because Yeah, he's never went away, but he went away to the mid-card. He went away, I mean, granted, you could say he never left it, but like he's been in this mid-carder for life, and then he's been in this tag team division for, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, whatever it is, that New Day have been an act. So it kind of does feel a little bit like a comeback story, because all of a sudden, where were these Kofi Kingston fans 2 weeks ago that were like begging for a Kofi Kingston WrestleMania main event? Like they didn't exist 2 weeks ago. Now we've got loads of them, and there's a reason why. It's because Kofi's great, and we're all sitting there going like, yeah, he was good, wasn't he? Yeah, I completely forgot that Kofi was an amazing wrestler and could tell really good stories in the ring. And that's where these 2 weeks of, or this week of, I'm now a Kofi Kingston mark has come back. And I think it is kind of a comeback story.
It's amazing that WWE have created one of their most emotionally engaging stories. So I was trying to think about the last time I was this emotionally invested in a WWE storyline. And it was when Dean Ambrose turned on Seth Rollins. As whether that was the right decision or not, I think in hindsight, it wasn't. That night after the Roman Reigns Zucchini announcement, there was a lot of high emotion there, and I was very, very invested in the Dean Seth storyline. But here you've got, yeah, Kofi is just really connected with all the fans, and like you said, great crowd in Texas. Yeah. Throughout the night, like, they're not going to cheer for stuff that's no reason to cheer for, like the Braun and Baron stuff. But when they were into stuff, they were so into it, and it was amazing. And Kingston got a large share of that applause. And it's because everyone believed in him so much. Just 6 days ago, this wasn't even a thing.
Yeah.
It was going to be Mustafa Ali in there, likely Mustafa Ali running the gauntlet and having that terrific showing. But he got injured. He was replaced by Kofi. And now he's like... So the show closes. Kofi outlasts everyone to be in there with Daniel Bryan. And they have just this terrific final 15-minute finale to the Chamber match.
So good.
Sort of so good. Like the Elimination Chamber 2011, when it went on with Edge and Rey Mysterio for ages, which we're reviewing for our Patreon podcast at the moment. Something I wasn't a fan of, but everyone else at the time really praised.
I'm a fan of in hindsight.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like that bit.
But this bit was way better than that was for me. I thought that Kofi and Bryan had a really, really great singles match that just so happened to be inside a chamber after an Elimination Chamber match.
It's almost like the Shawn Michaels Undertaker Royal Rumble finish. Where essentially they just stopped having a Royal Rumble match and just had a match in the middle of a Royal Rumble, or at the end of a Royal Rumble. I thought that the Kofi thing was wonderful. Like it was so good. And you're right, it's like so emotionally investing in this storyline. It was just tremendous to watch. And it's funny, I was thinking about this, like, I kind of, you know, I wish it could have been Mustafa Ali. It sucks for him that he got injured.
Yeah.
But at the same time, would that crowd have been so emotionally invested in that match if it was Ali? I think we're more emotionally invested in it because it's Kofi. And because it's 11 years in the making. It's 11 years that people have been like, we'd love to see a Kofi Kingston main event. Thought we were going to get one in 2009 and or wherever it was. And that just fell by the wayside. And ever since then, he's just fallen off into obscurity. Not obscurity, but yeah, the tag team wasteland that is WWE. And so now that he's getting this main event push, I was like, yes, here it is at long, long last. So I think that's why the crowd was... Because as soon as he came out, huge chance of Kofi.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'd argue he got one of the bigger reactions of like all six guys that came out. And that includes Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy and Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. Kofi Kingston was the one that got the big reaction. And the crowd chanting Kofi, popping massively for the near falls. I went into this match knowing that Daniel Bryan was winning. I convinced myself, Kofi's never winning this match. So the near falls aren't really going to affect me. They did affect me. And this crowd, it never felt like one person there thought, like, well, Daniel Bryan's winning. They all went, they were like, Kofi could win this. Kofi could faux show win this.
It's weird how just even after Tuesday, I was like, well, it'll be a nice thing. Kofi can have a good showing in the chamber and then maybe gets a Fastlane match out of
That's
it.
What I figured, yeah.
But no way should he be going for the WrestleMania title, like the title at WrestleMania. And now after this match, that last 15-minute showdown with Daniel Bryan and the closing image of Elimination Chamber, well, I think it was a few shots before the closing image, was Kofi sitting down on the steps of the chamber with Big E and Xavier either side of him. Big E, too big to actually fit on the steps. His butt was half off.
Yeah.
And they're both saying to him, like, that, signalling to the crowd noise around them, saying, thank you, Kofi. Like, that's for you. You did this. And you've got the WrestleMania 35 sign in the background. WWE know what they're doing. That's foreshadowing. The WrestleMania 35 sign is such a big feature in everything around this time of the year. Ronda Rousey's pointing at it. Charlotte's pointing at it. So when they show that there, that's not just like, oh, this will be a cool shot. This is, huh, let's set up a few different ways we can go with this. And I can't believe I'm saying this. I think you go with the grain here. You follow that momentum. You had the idea, or I don't know where you got it from, of the straight veg society. So Daniel Bryan, Eric Rowan, and then you bring Luke Harper back to make that a threesome. And then you have them versus the New Day at Fastlane, maybe have the New Day go over. And then you can have that singles match between Bryan and Kingston at WrestleMania.
Maybe make that the stipulation. If New Day can beat them, Kofi gets the WrestleMania match.
That's a great story.
Yeah, and like I think sort of like the start of this year, we've been saying on the show, like, I can definitely see them doing Daniel Bryan versus Mustafa Ali at WrestleMania, like building that as a big WrestleMania match. But you've hit the nail on the head. This is one of those moments where WWE need to ride that wave of momentum. It's easy for you to say. Ride that wave of momentum. And just not be like, oh yeah, but we did have other plans. Like, so let's not go with that now. It's like, no, forget that. Like, scrap those plans that you thought you might go with. Go with this, because this is working right now.
Yeah, because you could, WWE, given their track record, could easily go one of these two ways.
Yeah.
You could have, do what we said, and they go with the momentum.
Easy for you to say.
Or the next night on SmackDown, the New Day are back in the tag division, and it was a good showing. Made them believe. And then Mustafa Ali comes back, and people aren't going to like Mustafa Ali being inserted in this storyline now.
Kofi's spot.
Because they want Kofi.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't want Ali in that spot anymore. It's just that, really, we're now invested in this story. Don't just cut it off.
Absolutely.
Keep going with that momentum.
Yeah, I was even thinking then, like, on SmackDown, New Day come out and they cut this promo about, like, hey, Kingston, you gave it a really good show. And he's like, yeah, but you know what? I really want to win those tag team titles. I think we should get into a feud with the Usos again.
Fresh. Yeah, it's... But, I mean, I'm really hoping, because SmackDown have been doing such good work recently, and the way Elimination Chamber was framed, I keep coming back to that thought of what you said, where would we be into Mustafa Ali? And we would, but it's just a different kind of...
That's it, yeah.
A different kind of into, because Ali is this young up-and-comer. And they told a great story when they first debuted him back in this December on SmackDown, and have done since then. That's been a really, really good character arc. He's still got that pinfall victory over Bryan. But now you've got Kofi in here. It's a different kind of passion. Because it does feel like the Logan end. This isn't X-Men First Class, where you're like, oh, the young new guys are coming up. This is the grizzled vet. But that's not really Kofi. But it's more in that
range.
Side.
I see what you're saying. You're coming from here. It's not in the same vein, but it's the Kurt Angle story that you wanted them to tell on Raw, which is the Kurt Angle's final run. What this needs to be is like, this is Kofi's first run. The first run that he's been waiting 11 years to get. And you can just build all of these promo packages in the build up to WrestleMania of like showing him in his early days, showing him on ECW and you're making me crazy and all this sort of nonsense. And you can like really build that up and just tell this incredible story of Kofi Kingston on this 11-year journey to the WWE Championship versus the man who is holding the WWE Championship hostage because he's Captain Planet and he's the planet's champion and he's going to be the champion forever. And that's what he's focused on. He doesn't even care about this 11-year journey.
And the new day when they go serious. Oh, those could be great promo battles alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, take aside the in-ring product. Like, that could just be a great feud based on the promo work. How old do you think Kofi Kingston is? I just looked it up.
I'm going to say...
100, right? He's been wrestling for about 80 years on Raw and SmackDown.
I'm going to guess mid to late 30s.
Well, yeah, you're kind of exactly right. He's 37.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so... But he feels...
Younger than that.
Yeah, Well, he feels both younger and older.
Yeah.
It's a weird. It feels like he's been around the mid-card for so long that you almost forget he's there. It's like, again, you said the crowd kind of forgot that we love him so much. It's kind of, Dolph Ziggler has maybe jumped the shark on this, but that used to be where Dolph Ziggler was.
That's
at.
Exactly.
And
right,
he was flattened out, and then he'll get a push and everyone will be like, oh my God, Dolph Ziggler's amazing. I forgot about this. But then they did that too many times and we've been exhausted by those kinds of pushes. But here...
Like, so glad he got that number 30 spot of the Royal Rumble or whatever it was.
But Batista... when Batista started getting his like main event run, he was like 35.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Kofi isn't past it for a long shot. He could have a legit 5 years at the top there. AJ Styles is 42.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. Like, age now is not what it used to be sort of back in the day. The example I always used to give is that, like, the British Bulldog, when he returned to the WWF in, like, 99 and 2000, he was sad.
Yeah.
It was a sad sight to see the Bulldog that way, and he was there in his Wrangler jeans, and he just looked rubbish. He's the same age there that Finn Balor is now. And you're like, Finn Balor doesn't, like, he feels like a guy that's in his 20s, you know, because he's still going. And I'm pretty sure he's older than Kofi is, or it might be around.
Keep talking, I'll have a look.
Thank you very much. Google things live on air. Or they're roughly around the same age. It doesn't matter that Kofi's in his late 30s now, because as you said, AJ's 42.
They are the same age.
Yeah, they're the same age. Bobby Roode's in his 40s. You know what I mean? It's like,
Finn Balor's older.
Is he really?
By a month.
Oh, bless him.
When do you look at that? Yeah, it's just, the crowd are so organically into Kofi. I can't believe I'm saying this.
And it's
just,
they've
just done such a good job. This is just 6 days
of
storytelling.
It's funny as well. I was thinking about this. You know when we did our prediction show for 2019 and we were looking for like outlandish predictions for 2019? If someone had said in that predictions, oh, Kofi Kingston's going to get a big run in 2019 and like you're possibly going to be talking about him main eventing WrestleMania, or your quote main eventing WrestleMania with Daniel Bryan, I'd have been like, that's an outrageous claim. Because we've been conditioned to believe Kofi is in the New Day, he's in that tag team scene, and he's there until the end of time. He's a WWE lifer. There's no worry of him going anywhere, but he's just going to be there, and you're going to enjoy him regardless. And now here we are, like 6 days removed from an episode of SmackDown, where I'm like, Kofi Kingston should be in that main event main event of WrestleMania. One of the main events of WrestleMania.
One of the 20 main events.
Or they're all main events.
Your main events or the pre-show.
Or Finn Balor's match.
Yeah.
And so it's just ride this wave all the way to WrestleMania. Go with the grain. Don't go against it. And just like, and the crowd will be so into it come WrestleMania. And that could end up being one of the bigger, like loudest reactions on the night of people believing Kofi Kingston could win the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. And that's kind of like, based on the crowd reaction, could be as loud as Becky winning the belt.
Yeah. Yeah, like WWE don't have many properly over stars. They haven't done for years. It's just all the part-timers who have left. And now you're starting to get Becky, you've got Bryan, and I get Seth's not even at that level anymore. He's dipped down. So when you get something that just lands on your lap with Kofi, or something that, you know, full credit to WWE, they've managed to create this. Just go with it. Like, you don't get many chances at having such an organically over storyline like this.
Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The only match on the kickoff show was Buddy Murphy taking on Akira Tozawa. Surprise, surprise, Luke. They had, outside of Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston's last 15 minutes of the Chamber main event, the best in-ring match of the show.
100%. Like, yeah, who'd have thunk it, eh? That these two would have possibly the best match of the evening outside of the two Chamber matches. And yeah, they absolutely did. Also, got to say, off the bat, I had a bad night for predictions.
I had a terrible night for predictions.
I'm kicking myself for talking myself out of two of them. Because I talked myself out of the Baron Corbin thing. And I talked myself out of the Bobby Lashley thing as well. Mm. Should have listened to Dave. But so I had a bad night for predictions.
So you didn't call this one?
Oh, I got this first one. I got this one, but I just wanted to get off the bat. I had a bad night for predictions. Yeah. I'm 3 points behind you. And like 5 points behind Laurie. So I need to start warming up my vocal cord unless I can have an absolutely stonking Fastlane and WrestleMania and TakeOver New York and any other pay-per-views I could try and get my hands on between now and then.
Yeah, we're still not even halfway through season one.
No, and it already feels like I've already lost it.
Laurie just continues to be consistently very good at predicting shows.
Just go with him.
When he's the most idiotic out of all of us.
I wouldn't say he's the most idiotic. He's the one that cares the least.
Yeah, maybe that's what you've got to do with WWE predictions.
He doesn't watch these shows. Mm. Like, he doesn't watch Raw and SmackDown. He literally just watches NXT.
He'll watch bits that we like.
Yeah, and that's really it.
We'll just start watching the YouTube clips and we'll do it that way.
Yeah.
But this match, there was some terrific spots in it. There was Akira Tozawa dive through the ropes onto Buddy Murphy. Buddy Murphy caught him in the dive. But Tozawa's legs did not touch the ground. And put him up into a suplex.
Deadlift suplex.
Oh, that was amazing.
So good. So good. I think my only downside to this match, and again, it's the curse of the pre-show, they got the shrink screen treatment as they cut backstage to a New Day promo, which I thought was really unnecessary. Like, you've got an hour, guys. There is an hour's worth of this pre-show. You could have put this elsewhere.
Yeah, I said the exact same thing in my review. I don't get it. Like, why? This was a very, very good match. And it does. This was better than having a full screen ad break where here's a bunch of promos for stuff that you're going to see in about half an hour. Like, this was just the shrink screen rather than the whole full screen. But it's obvious that the wrestlers know that's happening because straight into a chin lock.
Yep.
When do you see chin locks in 205 Live matches? So the referee's like, oh, here's the bit where no one's going to be watching you. So just stall a bit and do some rest holds. I don't get it.
I do get
why they do it, because you're going to have, most people are going to be watching the actual match on the pre-show, so you want to push the pay-per-view then, but I think it's very disrespectful to these two guys.
Yeah, who had some really, really great stuff to the point where I thought Tozawa might even get the win here.
Oh, I never thought that.
No, I thought some of the spots towards the end, particularly when he hit like the senton through the ropes, essentially. So Buddy Murphy was kind of like halfway into the ring, and Tozawa hit the senton. Then I thought that might be it. I thought it was really, really cool. But eventually, Murphy's Law and the reign of Buddy Murphy continues on 205 Live.
Well, Corey Graves had a line saying, you know, he's the second longest running cruiserweight champion. He's only so many days off beating that. And I thought, that's Neville's record. So Buddy Murphy's going to beat Neville's record.
There you go.
Quite easily.
Yep.
So after this, we got just a Kevin Owens promo. Did you see this on the pre-show?
I did. I was very much skipping through things. You'd be like, Booker T, Booker T, Booker T, Beth Phoenix, Booker T, Booker T. Ah, there's the match.
Yeah. Braun Strowman promo. Yeah, I could have skipped that.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, and there's Kevin Owens. When I saw Kevin Owens, I was like, back up a second. I've got to see what Kev's got to say. And then I'll watch a promo video for Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, it was weird. It was Kevin Owens again. So on Raw, he was at a bowling alley and he was just talking with his friends. This one was shot on his mobile phone again in his car. And he had some pizza next to him. And he was talking about how he's got pizza for his kids to watch Elimination Chamber tonight. Still a month off from being medically cleared. He wants Finn Balor to win the Intercontinental title. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, well, that's a babyface move. But then he said he wants all the Riot Squad to win all the titles there. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, now you're just being Kevin Owens on Twitter.
Yeah.
You're being Kevin Owens in real life, which is good. But I feel like you do have to play a bit more within the rules of WWE continuity when you appear in WWE continuity.
Well, I wonder if your face heel dynamic with Kevin Owens depends on your opinions of pineapple on pizza.
I said in my review, it's not really something I feel strongly on.
I know it's like a big topic on, like, I guess, social media, but if you want it, like, have it, I guess.
I mean, sometimes I don't want it. Sometimes I have it.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I don't hate it.
No.
If it's there and it's pizza, I'll eat mostly anything on
exactly.
a pizza.
If people present to me a pizza and there is some pineapple on it, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, you absolute monster.
Slap it out of their hand.
Throw it in their face. And just going to go like, I mean, am I? Yeah, okay, I'll pick that off or I'll eat it. It doesn't really matter either way. I mean, really, some will tell you that putting anything on a pizza is disrespectful to a pizza.
Did you, but not hamburgers. Hamburgers in the crust is something special.
That was Pizza Hut taking things too far.
No, not far enough.
Cheeseburgers in the crust of a pizza.
What I want
was one step too far.
I couldn't sleep properly for 3 days after I ate that. I was so much fat was coursing through my veins. It's unsaturated fat. What I want is a pizza, stuffed crust, of course. Mm-hmm. Then you have a giant patty of a burger that covers the whole area of the pizza, and then another pizza on top of that. So it's kind of
a double
burger calzone. Mm, yeah,
that's what you're going with.
Yeah, it reminds. I just eat it like a, but I'll still fold that up.
It reminds me of that. Are you a folder?
Yeah, I'm a folder.
Yeah, good man. It reminds me of that Mitchell and Webb sketch where they're talking about their toothpaste companies. They're like, well, what more can we do with toothbrushes? Like we've done everything there is, and they're like, what if we can get them to brush their tongues? All you've got to do is just have a Scottish scientist that he goes, do you know that 87% of the country suffers from dirty tongue? If we can get them to brush their tongue, we can get them to do anything. That's what the burger and a pizza thing is. Just they had a meeting with like, well, there's nothing else to do with pizzas. We've literally done everything. Have you tried hamburgers?
No. I completely disagree. I think Pizza Hut are pushing the boundaries. By the way, Pizza Hut, if you're watching, you can get in contact with us. Mm-hmm. At Ollie at WrestleTalk.com, Luke at WrestleTalk.com. Domino's, if you're out there, any pizza brands who want to sponsor us, that'd be the dream. We're sponsored by beer sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be sponsored by beer again on the podcast. Coming back.
It's all good. Anyway, we got distracted by pizza. It happens way too much to me, unfortunately, in real life. So the main card. Oh, we got a bit of Mark Henry as well.
Yes, because
Texas.
And he's got a network documentary that's available now.
I bet that's quite good.
I bet you it's very good as well. Yeah. Then we got I like the opening video package for this show. I really enjoyed it, where it was kind of telling it from the perspective of the chamber as if it was a real person being like, you've got to get through me if you want to get to WrestleMania.
It's that hammy old style of promo that they used to do in like between, I guess, 2000 and 2006.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun. So we kicked off with the Women's Tag Team Championship Elimination Chamber match.
Now, there was a rumor going round that the Kofi thing changed these plans somewhat. This was going to close the show.
Yeah, that's what I heard, that Vince McMahon was... that like, all the wrestlers were told backstage, this is going on last.
Yeah.
And then it turned out to be the men's match.
Yeah. Which I think is probably a smarter move.
Yeah.
Because as much as I did like this, it was ropey going to start with. I was kind of stunned at how ropey it was in the opening. Considering it was like Bayley Banks, Sonya, and Mandy, I just thought them just falling over each other. And I thought to myself, there are 8 more women to come into this ring here. This could go very horribly.
Yeah, it was sloppy. It wasn't super sloppy. I don't think it was as bad as a lot of people are saying. But it was definitely a bit boring. Like, yeah. I definitely got a bit tedious. And that's not what you want for the first match. I was very fresh. And weirdly, the rest of the show got me more excited. And the last part of this match did. Did you hear the Corey Graves chants when Carmella came in?
I did not, no.
There was a few, apparently. So, of course, Corey Graves has been accused by his wife on social media for having an affair with Carmella. And another report from Brian Alvarez says that's why Carmella and Naomi were the first to be eliminated.
The reports from the live people there live was that the commentators didn't get their entrances like they usually do. Mm. They just sort of brought them out sort of, you know, on the sly to try and avoid Graves getting booed. But it's, obviously this is just, it's rumour, it's speculation, it's an accusation, I suppose. But it's in Laurie's news, right, of that person that said like, this is the moment that Corey Graves told the world that he was having an affair with Carmella. Oh, is that not in the news? Sorry, no. Laurie was showing it to me earlier in the studio.
Yeah, because that is not the moment.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, he's doing commentary.
Yeah,
in character to something Byron Saxton says.
Yeah, Byron Saxton, he's like, here are the people, and it's my personal favourite, Miss Money in the Bank, Carmella. Because she was a heel, and Corey is a heel, and he always put her over because she was a heel. Now she's a babyface. He doesn't put her over anymore.
Well, and the tweet also said, and look, after he said that, you can see him holding his head in his hands like someone shouting at him over the earpiece. I'm like, that's not what's happening at all. It's because Byron Saxton is talking, and Corey, as a character,
yeah,
does not like Byron Saxton. Yeah, so, but it's all... I mean, it's whatever's going on. It's potentially horrible, but I've got to look at the silver lining. I did predict that Naomi and Carmella would get eliminated first,
yeah,
which is one up for this guy.
It was funny. It was, and it's the downside to us doing our predictions on the Thursday, because when after Friday, like I turned to Laurie in the office, and I was like, Carmella and Naomi are going out first.
Mm.
I was like, yes. Like an idiot. I thought it would be the Iconics who went out second, but I thought it was definitely going to be Naomi Carmella after Friday.
So the show, this match was kind of built around, will Sasha Banks be able to perform considering all the injuries she's had recently? And Bayley's been carrying the load of their team. And they flipped it on their head with Banks really taking it to everyone else and having to save Bayley a lot of the time. It was a nice, I like that dynamic of it. But you had the Iconics, who was out first? Riot Squad out first. And then we had the Iconics when everyone was down and they immediately tried to pin people. Thought that was very funny.
Now, I have been a big supporter of the Iconics.
Mm.
I bloody love the Iconics. I think they're tremendous characters. I've really enjoyed their work in NXT. I think they've had a ropey road on the main roster because this is their first pay-per-view since coming up. Unless you ignore... Super Showdown is technically their first, but this is like their first proper in-canon pay-per-view appearance since coming up to the main roster. They weren't even at Money in the Bank. Like, you know, and you think most people are in that by accident. Lana's been in one, I think. So this is their first time here. I feel like they've gotten worse. Like, they were very bad. And I felt bad for them.
Mm.
And it just feels like, man... You go when you get nothing to do for a year, I guess you just get bad at this. Because they were great in NXT. Really good.
They were good at trash talking while
their matches
moving around.
Were good.
I mean in this match.
I
thought they were doing good character work, but yeah, yes. It's very sloppy wrestling.
There was one of them where Peyton does this knee, and it was like the weakest knee you've ever, like there was literally no impact to it whatsoever. That's a bit sad.
Yeah. Oh, well, they were eliminated next.
No, they weren't.
After Naomi and...
They pinned Naomi, and then they were eliminated.
Yeah, Naomi and Carmella were in for like a hot second, really.
Yeah.
They were gone and out really quick. There was a nice bit where they all hit finishes on each other, and there was a 10-person down. Quite enjoyed
that.
That
was really
spot.
Good. And Sonya, in that moment, she was my shining star of that, where she hit that spear. It was
wicked.
Yeah. It was cool.
That was the first bit where I started to get into the match.
That was
and then a couple of minutes later, I was fully
That was my turning point, too.
And you're like, there's a lot of people in there. Because Jax and Tamina are going to run through them all. Nia, Jax, and Tamina are out last, and they eliminate the Iconics pretty quickly after they tried to hide in the safety of the pod.
So good. So funny. They even did like the friends thumbs up. They were like, oh, friends.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved it. That was really funny.
And the Riot Squad, they got pinned after that with a pretty cool looking Jax Samoan drop off the second rope, I think it was. Yep. Then Tamina splashed them both. And then Jax, as we all know, looking at Braun Strowman, they can't course correct large people when they run.
Yes, but what was she running at?
Bailey.
She was nowhere near her.
Oh, Bailey did move, but she'd already started in motion.
It's like Bailey was sort of half in the ropes and Nia Jax just started charging towards her. But Bailey didn't even have to move because Nia Jax was nowhere near running towards her. She essentially ran at the pod. She thought the pod was a person and charged at them because Bailey didn't have to move whatsoever.
It's very disorientating when you're in there. You've got this sort of perspex glass. It's at the weird angles. You don't know where people are.
Okay.
Bright lights.
So you think it's like a mirror effect.
Oh, yeah,
she thought she saw it. Like the ending of Skyscraper. She thought
that's
basically what she was in.
That really cool but really pointless bit of Skyscraper.
That's my favourite moment of Skyscraper. When he introduced this thing, you're like, oh, okay, well, this is going to play into the third act.
That's
then
the fight scene.
Yeah, that's the fight scene at the end, is it? Because yeah. This serves no purpose.
I had a bit of a struggle when I wrote my review for this, because I used that joke in the review. Not the great Skyscraper joke, but the sort of, you can't course correct when... I went with the verbiage monster wrestlers.
Mm.
But I didn't want to say large wrestlers because it was about women. So I just said monster wrestlers.
You don't want Dave Meltzer this.
Yeah, I didn't want to. But like, she's definitely bigger than everyone else in the ring. And she's booked that way.
Yeah.
But I still felt uncomfortable recognizing that she's large. I feel weird saying it now.
Well, I'm going to save you a little bit here because this led to one of my favorite moments of this whole match.
Tamina Bundle.
Which is Nia Jax just bundles herself through the pod because she's a doofus, apparently. And then Nia has this look on her face that says, oh, but I'm rubbish. I can't do this on my own. And lo and behold, she cannot do this on her own because everyone just completely decimated her and pinned her.
Yeah.
She is. Nia Jax is carrying this team in both heat and in ring work.
I liked the idea that Tamina, I think she missed a splash or something, but she's on the ground. And then Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, Sasha Banks, Bayley all jump on her to pin her, do that like sort of quadruple pin to keep her down. But it also kind of looks like the booking vortex has sucked them all into the earth. And that's, Tamina was her own downfall.
And the crowd did sing the na-na-na song to Nia and Tamina, which, I mean, look, the Bayley and Banks moment was lovely. I do think having the heels win and having a babyface chase is a more interesting story to tell than a moment. But then again, you don't always get to have these nice moments. So, and this was a nice moment.
Yeah, I didn't mind it at all.
No, I didn't mind it really, but it's just, I think there is an argument to be made for it.
Prediction. Yeah, but the last two, just like the main event, the last two teams or last two participating forces was really good stuff. And I can't believe I'm saying that about a Mandy Rose match, but she was really good. Deville was really good. Banks and Bayley, of course, are very good by themselves. And they did a nice callback to Elimination Chamber last year.
It was really good.
Where Sasha helped Bayley up onto the pod to take out one of the Fire and Desire. When last year, it was Sasha pushing Bayley off the pod to beat up Alexa Bliss.
Yeah.
So that was I really liked that. That was a good attention to detail.
Really, really cool. And then Banks, being the absolutely amazing wrestler that she is, she locks in the Banks team, and because she's been worked over and she can't use her shoulder properly because of the story they've been telling, she hits this like modified version of the Banks team to get the win. I thought it was a really, really cool finish. I really, really liked it.
I really hope that Banks and Bayley get something from this now, because it's just been a year. They have been a joke. They've been a joke for a year about this worst booked feud of them what I don't, I still can't.
It starts at that Elimination Chamber spot you were talking about.
Well, it goes back even further, I think. It's just this, again, a vortex of nothingness with those two. And then they, after they became a team, they did nothing again. Just matches against Riot Squad, who are their own version of don't pay attention, nothing's going to happen here.
Do you see Liv Morgan's tweet?
No.
It was on Saturday night. She put up this tweet saying, like, we've been booked against the Bella Twins, Ronda Rousey, Bayley and Banks, blah, blah, blah. And we're booked against them because we're the best. And that's why we're always in these matches. And I was like, yeah, but you lost all those matches. Mm. So you're crap then?
But they're making them believe to get booked there in the first place. But this was a really nice moment. Banks and Bayley were visibly, and I think authentically, overcome with emotion.
You could hear Beth crying on commentary. Yeah. I thought Corey was really nice about this as well, because Corey's always been like, he buries Banks as often as he can do within character. But even he, like, when the match finished, he's just like, you're crying.
Yeah.
Like, he just goes like, all of a sudden there's a lump in my throat. Mm. So that was a really nice touch.
And the crowd are chanting, you deserve it.
I thought it was a really, really nice moment. Lovely. Got to give a shout out to Riot Squad. I know I just sort of buried Liv a little bit there, but their dive off the pods, I thought it was really good. They did this double dive. But my favourite spot of miscommunication was they did a spot where Mandy Rose was in the corner and they were going to do a catapult of Sonya Deville into Mandy Rose. But Mandy sort of moved out of the way. So Sonya just went into the corner and the commentators went, she hit Mandy! And then realized, and they were like, oh no, Mandy got out of the way.
But my favourite on the spot.
But my favourite moment of this is when they both hit, Sonya just looked at Mandy with like, what are you doing?
So after that lovely moment, we got another lovely moment with The Miz coming out. And he said, I'm going to dedicate this tag title match to my dad, to my wife, Maryse, to my daughter, and, drum roll, Maryse comes out, their second child on the way.
How exciting. Lovely news. Lovely bit of news.
I felt like, I guess like we get it here with the viewers and when people send in stuff to us, I feel like we're a big family.
Yeah.
And when Miz said that, I felt like I was part of his family. That
was nice.
Like that with the Kofi stuff and with Banks and Bayley, this is the correct balance of baby faces and heels on a wrestling show.
Yeah.
And then you have like heels getting the fairiest stuff. I mean, Daniel Bryan won the main event. That was a heel thing to happen. But as a fan, I don't feel like I've been just beaten down to the extent of not wanting to watch anymore.
Like Baron Corbin.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really, really nice moment. And Maryse comes out, and then Shane comes out and they all hug. And it was pretty lovely, really. I was really happy for them.
Proposal.
I did see your note about this, which I love.
Shane's the father. That is how we get the McMahon heel turn on Miz.
Yeah.
Because he's been sleeping with Maryse. Oh. Think how sweaty that man gets while jogging.
He was so sweaty in this match.
He got sweaty and red-faced.
He was so sweaty. Bobby Lashley was backstage going like, he's very sweaty.
That man needs a towel.
He is. So, can you get him a headband? He is very sweaty. The Byron Saxton also said that the Usos are the longest running tag team in WWE history.
Well, if you count from birth.
Well, yeah.
When did they become a tag team?
So apparently it's five years they have been a tag team in WWE. And that makes them the longest running tag team in WWE. Now, either I misheard that, which, you know, if I did, I apologize for. But that's what I heard. And I was like, is that true?
That can't be. Not with the 80s.
Well, yeah, but how long were they in WWE for? Like the Road Warriors came in as the Legion of Doom, but they went sort of back and forth with WCW. And I don't know, man. Like, it could be true.
Well, let's see what happens after April. I'm sure that. So what happened in this match was the Usos eventually won, which was a shock. I think we all had Miz and Shane to retain here.
Thought we'd lose them at Fastlane.
Yeah. And then on the Wrestling Observer review of this show, they said, Dave Meltzer pointed out, oh, of course they lost. Like, of course they won, rather, because they don't want the Usos going to AEW. Reports are that their contracts are up around the April time, like a few other people's are.
So it's a revival situation.
I was like, of course! Yeah. Like, the two teams that are in danger of leaving for AEW just happened to have won tag titles over a week period.
Yeah.
Raw with the Revival last Monday, and now here with the Usos.
And after the Friday that Jimmy Uso had as well.
Yeah, of course. So he was arrested. He was fully arrested because he squared up to a police officer on Thursday night. So, yeah, typically that would dictate you're not going to win. And Meltzer pointed out, this is a very weird time in wrestling because traditionally, if you're on your way out of the promotion, the last thing that promotion does is put a belt on you.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, they would be worried about them just leaving with the belt or exposing wrestling as not being real. It was a huge thing.
Yeah.
And here you have WWE putting belts on people to kind of make them stay.
Because they're belt marks.
Yeah,
they're marks for
curious.
These ugly-looking belts. I've seen the Revival's Twitter campaign to bring back the, not the classic tag belts, but the tag belts that you and I would have known when we were youngsters. I really hope that they succeed because those belts are so much nicer than, because those Raw and Tag SmackDown belts are ugly as sin.
Yeah, it really fits with their gimmick as well. They're called the Revival.
Yeah.
As well with Daniel Bryan's eco belt. So this match, I was actually a big fan of this match because I thought it told, in terms of in-ring succinctness, I thought this might have been the best told story on the entire show, which is the Usos. Sure, you're brothers and have been wrestling together forever, but Miz and Shane can wrestle together as a coherent tag team as well. And then it was the Usos who had the miscommunication with a dive crashing in. Well, one Uso crashed into the other. I lose track of which Uso I'm watching.
I've got it here. It was Jimmy that took out Jay.
Jimmy taking out Jay. I'm sure I've done that wrong in a review somewhere. And then Miz and Shane capitalized on that, but ultimately the Usos won.
Because the Miz pushed Shane too far.
Mm.
That's the storyline that they're telling with this, is that Miz gets too into these things. And he keeps telling Shane to go up top and do the elbow, which takes Shane out of the picture. And then Miz has to do things on his own. He gets too excited, he gets too into this. And when he lost, Miz, his acting was great in
this, where he just
looks so sad because he dedicated this match to his family. And this, that, and the other.
His unborn child.
His unborn child. And he just looks at Shane and is like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
And later on, there's a segment backstage where Shane's getting tended to in the medic's room. And Miz is still furious with himself. And Shane's trying to calm him down. So it'll be interesting where they go with this team. I love this match. I love this story. I thought it was a fun match as well. That great spot where Shane hit one coast to coast, goes up to hit another in the opposite corner, but gets super kicked in midair. The horrors of, was it Survivor Series 2016?
The one with Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns' spear. It gets me, but it was a cool spot. But I just, looking back at this rather than in isolation and as a whole arc, it would have been better if they never won the belts at Royal Rumble, but they keep going up against the Bar, against the Usos, against the New Day, just falling short every time, but really proving themselves. And you build towards a WrestleMania title win.
Mm.
And that's the big payoff. And then that's when you start to sow the seeds of dissension. So it feels like they've told a very rushed story. When this is really a 9-month story, that it seems like they're telling it in three.
You want WWE to do long-term storytelling, though.
They do it for their top people.
Shane is one of them.
Top guy. Yeah, he's the best in the world.
So I thought this match was, I think I like the story of this match in terms of the acting that Shane and Miz did than anything else.
Hmm.
I like the Usos in the match because I'm a big fan of the Usos. But like aside from the Shane coast-to-coast spots and Shane doing the elbow, I'm not sure I could recall anything else that happened within the match if I didn't have my notes. I thought it was a fine SmackDown match, but pay-per-view level worthy storytelling and furthering that story.
Yeah. I mean, I it's Miz and Shane. I wasn't expecting this in-ring classic. I got what I wanted from this
kind of match. But Shane's the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, it's the Usos are now the SmackDown Tag Team Champions.
6 times.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here because they haven't really been setting up anything outside of the Miz-Shane stuff. And now Miz and Shane aren't in the title. I mean, does that feud continue?
Just do it. Do a rematch at Fastlane, I guess. I mean, automatic rematch clauses are antiquated.
Yeah, well, they're not around.
No, absolutely.
And neither are McMahon heel authority figures.
Authority figures are a thing of the past.
After this, we got Finn Balor taking on both Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush for an Intercontinental title.
Paige here.
Plugging
her movie. Yeah, and Leo and Bobby did a backstage interview with Dasha? asking whether Leo is the weak link in this. And it was at this point here, I was like, Finn's winning. Damn it. I'm an idiot. I'm an absolute idiot for not seeing this coming. Yeah.
You're saying that because you did the wrong prediction rather than you wanted a lengthy run for Bobby Lashley.
Well, yeah. I mean, Bobby did so much with that belt that he really needed it longer, I guess. But yeah, when he's like, Leo said, like, I'm not the weak link. But Bobby was like, yeah, I think you are, mate. And I was like, dang it, I was totally wrong.
And that's, I mean, this was a pretty well-told story as well in terms of Leo Rush only tagging in when Balor was down and then tagging out when Balor had kind of recovered. And eventually Rush gets too cocky, blind tags himself in, and Balor traps him and gets the win by pinning Rush. That's a very well-told story. I mean, it's not the story I particularly care about. I think it looks stupid when you do it with championship belts. The idea that a guy can lose. I mean, it's different in a three-way. I don't know why a three-way is fine, but this irks me.
Did it work because, like, remember Christian when he was in TNA was undefeated for 2 years, but had been champion like twice, and apparently but had never been pinned and never submitted. But with the Finn Balor thing, I think what irked me about this match is that this is Balor winning the belt, but this was 90% one guy dominating the other guy, and then them getting a win out of nowhere by pinning a cruiserweight. So I'm not sure it's like didn't feel like a big win for Finn.
No one buys into Balor on Bobby Lashley's level.
Well, that's what he can make him believe. That's what this match essentially told you. This match told you Finn Balor is proper rubbish. Unless he's up against a cruiserweight, then he's very good.
I totally get all that criticism. I wasn't a fan of the match itself, although it did what it set out to do. So I guess
just get the belt on Finn. Yeah,
yeah. I'm just at the end of this. It's one of those things where I could go either way. I could hate this match and agree with you, or I could just go, Finn Balor's Intercontinental Champion. Somehow, this is the only title he's won since the Universal title back in SummerSlam 2016. A title he never really lost. And he's champion now. So I'm happy with that. I was in a good mood.
Yeah, no, which is fair enough. And I think that the match itself was, I didn't particularly care for it much. But I'm glad to see that Finn is champion. But for me, I think I'm going to err on the side of caution that I would like to see them. Like, grand, R-Truth is United States champion, but, like, what has that meant since he won it? Like, Finn at least will get on TV because Raw's got a lot of hours to fill, but it's where we go from here. Because Lashley didn't seem to care later on in the night that he lost the belt. And also, Finn didn't seem to care that his friend Braun Strowman was being beaten down either, but
we'll get to that.
We'll come on to that, I guess.
After that match, after Balor walked out, Lashley hit a freak accident again on Leo Rush. Not again, but he's used the freak accident before. So this could have been a split. I didn't take it that way. I took it more as, I'm a heel, I'm frustrated, I'm going to beat up my tiny manager.
Yeah.
I'm not into it. I'm not into it. If they do break up, I'm not into it. If they don't break up, it's just dead space for me, yep. Bobby Lashley, as is all the Raw mid-card, which, again, we'll come on to. But what was good was the angles that surrounded 2 minutes of wrestling in Ronda Rousey taking on Ruby Riott.
Hey, she could be in the main event of WrestleMania, Ruby Riott, that is. There is every chance that Ronda Rousey she's looking through Ruby Riott, and unfairly so. I mean, pretty quite fairly so. She beat her very convincingly in a matter of minutes. Matter of seconds, really.
Well, it was under 2 minutes, but a lot of that was Ruby outside.
Ruby stalling.
Stalling outside. This was never a wrestling match. It's never been promoted as a wrestling match. It was all promoted as Charlotte's going to be there at ringside watching, and Becky Lynch is most likely going to come out. And that's what happened, and that's what I got.
Yep.
I wasn't disappointed by Ruby versus Rousey because I never bought into that happening, but I was very pleasantly, not surprised, but they just had a great angle afterwards.
Oh, the angle was so good. It was awesome. So, so good.
So they set this up before the Ruby Riott match. Not doing a video package recap or anything for the classic Ruby Ronda feud. That'd be the WWE's editing department are amazing.
Yeah.
They could probably pull it off.
They could
find some like shots from Super Showdown in that match.
Oh yeah, they could probably make something of it. Yeah.
But they showed that live events actually matter, because on the previous night, Becky Lynch turned up even though she's suspended at a WWE live show, attacked Charlotte, but Charlotte kicked Becky's knee and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice way to say, hey, we do run live shows and stuff does happen on them. Please come and see them.
Yeah.
Because not many people are at the moment.
Yeah, live shows are this weird thing where they are out of they're out of continuity shows, because despite the fact they'll be building up to a pay-per-view match in 3 weeks, they'll have that pay-per-view match at a house show, like this quote first time ever thing. So they kind of sort of that this weird non-continuity thing. But then sometimes if you do go to one, it is a continuity thing and the storyline is being progressed while we're there. But I actually really liked, I think it was Michael Cole saying that, like, when they were showing these rumors, it's like, and rumors have it that Becky left the building on crutches, setting up what would happen later on. I thought was really, really cool. It added a lot level of intrigue to this.
Yeah. Also, before we get on to that angle, Ronda Rousey was dressed a lot better.
Well, she was dressed as Sonya Blade, which was in my news on Friday.
Is that what it was?
They said that on commentary as well. Yeah. They called it MK11 rather than Mortal Kombat 11.
Right.
Which I, you know, it's short, I suppose. Yeah. So she's got her own YouTube series called Ronda on the Road, and she revealed in that video, she was talking to someone backstage who I believe is actually Sasha Banks's husband/boyfriend, that she's going to be dressed as Sonya Blade for Elimination Chamber and for Fastlane, and then she's going to go back to regular Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I thought she looked much better.
She looked so much cooler here.
Yeah, right.
I thought she looked awesome. Because she didn't have the stupid makeup. The stupid pay-per-view eye triangle makeup, I don't know.
The Black Swan makeup.
Yeah. But Ruby made a tap in under 2 minutes. Sorry, Ronda. We didn't skirt over one of the biggest upsets in recent times.
There were some people who were messaging me going like, do you think it's possible that Ruby could win the belt? Like, and I was like, absolutely not. Do you want to build up Ronda for all this time to have Ruby Riott beat her a month out from WrestleMania? I don't think so, mate.
But Ronda did, of course, win. And then Charlotte got in the ring afterwards. And then Becky, so slowly, walking through the crowd, hobbling through the crowd, barely getting over the barricade, barely getting into the ring on these crutches. How did she get past security?
I don't know. Well, they were saying on commentary that she bought a ticket.
But she climbed the barricade.
Well, she's also a wrestler, though, isn't it? It's like the Gronk.
So this was very, very cool. But that woman tried to stop the Gronk.
Yeah, incorrectly so.
This was good stuff, but that there was a severe logic hole there. Like, there wasn't even any referees running down until she'd finished assaulting both of the unsuspended talent. So Charlotte's there.
All right, Michael Cole.
Charlotte's there. Becky's looking at her. And then Becky starts wailing down on Charlotte with this crutch. Ronda's looking on, smirking, like being almost, this is what happened to me at Survivor Series with the kendo stick, up yours, Charlotte. And then Ronda picks up the crutch. So Becky has a crutch, Ronda has a crutch, and for a moment I thought, we're getting a lightsaber battle.
Oh yeah, they're going to be sitting there going,
yeah. But instead they both turned, they looked at Charlotte, and they're like, okay, let's both beat down Charlotte because neither of us like her. And I thought that would be fine. That's a great angle. They made it even better by having Becky turn on Ronda and beat up Ronda before she could even get a strike in on Charlotte. There wasn't even like, yeah, hit her a little bit. It was boom, right, taking you out right away.
You idiot, you turned your back.
Brilliant stuff.
I thought Becky was really, really cool here. And then security ran down, the crowd are going nuts. They're chanting for Becky. Like, even during the quote match between Ronda and Ruby, there were chants for Becky. Mm. Like, it's incredible. It's a bizarre thing, the Becky Lynch thing. I was thinking about this over the weekend. The Becky Lynch thing I find very, very bizarre in that she is clearly the most over person in this company. Like, I would argue she's the most over person in this company, possibly just above Kofi Kingston at this point. And you could argue she's the most over person in wrestling full stop.
Mm.
And yet, when they built a whole show about her on Raw, they had the biggest drop-off of viewers. Like, that third hour was one of the lowest watch of the year. And you're like, it doesn't... The things just don't sort of correlate, do they? It's really bizarre.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's because people are so disinterested in WWE. And that this is symptomatic of years of bad, ineffective booking. not so much a snapshot in the moment.
Yeah.
But it, how can you tell? I just hope Vince McMahon doesn't look at those numbers and think, ah, it's not working.
That's my worry about the whole thing. But I thought Becky was really good. The only thing I didn't like about the segment was Michael Cole.
And that after this really hot thing that happened, really you want to sort of give us a break and go, okay, here's a video package while we try and gain control at ringside.
Send Lacey Evans out for a second.
Instead, Baron Corbin's music hit right away and it just brought me crashing down like Hulk Hogan's entrance music.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, God damn it, I forgot this match was on the card.
I couldn't believe this was ahead of it, in all fairness. But I do want to talk about the Michael Cole thing. Because Michael Cole was burying Becky Lynch in this segment. And it felt so unlike a face commentator should be doing. Like, if this was Austin with JR, JR would be putting this over as a big thing and being like, the fans are all behind Becky. The face commentator is with the fans and we're all cheering this guy as our hero. But Michael Cole's sitting there going like, she is awful. She's the worst. She's a terrible person for doing this. She's suspended. She should be at home. She should be this, that, and the other. And I'm like, why would your face commentator do that? It's fine when Corey does it. He's the heel. But having Michael Cole do it was really weak. Because then you just got Renee Young as a lone wolf there at ringside. Speaking of Baron Corbin, the lone wolf on the commentary desk going like, this is great. Becky's awesome.
Yeah, I think, well, it's because Cole, I'm not condoning this. I'm just Pritchard in the situation and explaining what I think's happening from their point of view. Cole isn't the play-by-play. He isn't the babyface commentator. He's the play-by-play guy. He is WWE's voice. And Becky is breaking WWE's rules.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
So he is on WWE's side, whereas Corey's the heel, Renee's the face. I don't think it works either. I'm just trying to make some sense of what they're doing.
Oh, Ronda was bleeding from the head as well.
Oh, yeah. Those are... Well, it's because she was flopping around when Becky was doing the crutch shots. As far as I understand it, you've got to stay relatively still. Yeah. That's how Mustafa Ali got busted open with Randy Orton
doing the Galvin
doing
stomps.
The stops. Yeah. But she was, you know, going. She's too good at selling that she actually busted herself open.
Yeah. So
yes,
yeah,
here we go.
Well, here we go. It's Braun Strowman versus Baron Corbin in a no DQ match in really an angle that could have been saved for Raw.
Yeah. Yeah. The only reason this was on here was for the piss break. But that makes no sense because they played about four video packages for WWE Shop, WrestleMania, Fastlane, had a Miz and Shane backstage segment, and this weird Lacey Evans thing after it. This was completely unnecessary, and it went on for ages.
Oh, so long.
How much better would this show have been if it was half an hour lighter? And this is the first thing you cut.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the beatdown just kept going on and on and on. Made worse by the fact that Michael Cole's on commentary going like, it's just like Raw a few weeks ago when they took it. And I was like, I know it's just like Raw. I've seen this so many times, Michael Cole.
And Corey Graves is going, Braun Strowman's got no friends. But he does.
He does.
I've seen them. They help him out routinely.
I was like, where's Kurt Angle? Where's Finn? I even wrote down at one point in my notes, where's Finn? And I thought, get rid of that note. You're an absolute idiot. Of course Finn's going to come out and save him. So I got rid of that note. And then the segment ended, and I was like, no, really, where was Finn? Bobby came out. Bobby came out to help his friend.
He's celebrating on that Intercontinental title money.
Guess
so. So what happened, it was Corbin versus Strowman. It was a no DQ match. They did some fun stuff, like Braun caught a giant desk chair. Braun also caught a kendo stick and said, what did he say?
He said, I don't need kendo stick to whip your ass.
Yeah, so
and
that was
broke
cool.
It over his knee.
There was a running power slam through a table. And that's when Drew McIntyre's music hit. Bobby Lashley turned up. And that these three heels just beat down Braun Strowman. I just don't get why they're a team still. Like, what? Have they ever done a mission statement? Bobby Lashley had just gone through some things earlier and now he's seemingly fine. I didn't like this at all. Braun lost, which I don't think is good for, like, he has just been flattened out over the last 6 months, systematically chipped away at any bit of momentum he had. And it's crazy that a triple powerbomb on Braun Strowman through two tables stacked one on top of each other off the steel steps. was greeted by me with a, huh. That's a cool spot. That's the sort of thing I would have spent ages trying to bug out No Mercy to do in my youth.
My question was, though, why did they hit a triple powerbomb on Braun?
I think because you add Dean Ambrose to Braun's team.
Already got a team.
I don't know. Well, Balor might be doing a new thing. I don't know. It was all bad. It was all bad, this segment.
Yeah, this was a Raw angle that would have closed a show 4 months ago when Baron Corbin was at fault for Raw being bad.
And we would have been disappointed then.
Yeah, but here it was on pay-per-view, just wasting time. This felt like a waste of time.
Yeah.
And this show wasn't even that long. It was only about 3.25 hours. But it would have benefited from being shorter without this and the Lacey Evans thing.
Yeah, do you want to talk about the Lacey Evans thing?
Yeah, so we had the Shane segment, as you mentioned earlier, and then Lacey Evans' music hits. And Lacey Evans hasn't been seen on TV really since she got called up and she then, you know, was at the Royal Rumble. So when her music hits, I didn't know whose it was.
No.
Then she walked down to the ring. Well, no, she didn't. She walked out and then she turned and she walked back. And they cut to another video. And that was it.
And they didn't really explain it or go, oh, I guess, like, we're not good enough for her, or the reason she... Or, like, Corey Graves wasn't going, oh, brilliant! She hasn't come out here because it's all the horrible people in Texas. Or there wasn't any interview backstage with Lacey Evans afterwards. I haven't been on WWE.com, so maybe there was
one on
there.
YouTube.
Of her explaining why she hasn't. She's just had a single tweet explaining this, and it is because it's what you would expect. I'm too good for a pay-per-view. Why would I show my face on that? And that's not how usually you save yourself for the pay-per-view. That's faulty logic. The wrestling's never been built that way.
I want to be on free TV.
Yeah. You know, you never get heels going, well, I'm going to wrestle every week on free TV because I'm not going to make you pay money to... It doesn't work.
Yeah, I was going to say, you get a pay-per-view payday when you get onto pay-per-view. That's where you want to be.
Yeah.
That she has no video on WWE.com.
So this was...
Or on YouTube at the very least.
Very similar to that Elias segment on last week's Raw, where they kept interrupting him singing songs with video packages. But it wasn't very well visually conveyed or explained what was happening. So it just came off as confusing and like production botches. Leaves you having to fill in the blanks and explain what's happening.
If she does this again on Raw, that's her character then. Mm. She is just going to have weeks of just coming out, turning around and going back. That'll get her over.
Yeah, so we've got Lars Sullivan's gimmick is not being around at all. We've got Lacey Evans' gimmick is walking down to the ring halfway and then leaving. And we've got EC3's, which is a mute, and Otis Dozovich's is being a horny gremlin. Yeah, those WWE call-ups worked really well, everyone who said we were being too negative. Hey, Luke, what would you say if I said to you, blood, sweat, tears, pain, full throttle, high octane, making moves, taking names, cruising down that fast lane, fear, facing, dream, chasing, now or never, no dream wasting, fueled up, and my heart's racing, time's up, no second placing, it's WWE, fast lane, baby!
I'll be honest, I'm amazed I didn't get more people sending me messages going like, teasing Adam Cole, aren't they?
Well, I didn't think of that until you just said it.
Yeah.
Because it's spelt baby. In the title card, it's spelt baby, not bay-bay.
Well, I know, but still.
Bay-bay.
Subtle, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You came in and you said this to me in the office. And I guess WWE this looked like every video that WWE do for their pay-per-views. So it didn't really affect me. This wasn't like best of both brands because it wasn't the stars themselves singing it. This was just, this could have been a pay-per-view advert for Hell in a Cell. And I'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right.
But most pay-per-view adverts get Pitbull or Flo Rida songs.
Not in the early stages. That comes later.
I don't know. But Fastlane isn't a big five that you start selling with its own
song. It's only 2 weeks away.
I I think this is brilliantly awful. I think it just stinks of a load of white businessmen in a room going, rap's edgy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's make a rap, an original rap for a pay-per-view we're selling where they have to say WWE Fastlane. Not yeah. Fastlane, it's WWE Fastlane in the lyrics.
It's like the Wrestle Rock Rumble all over again. What I would say about this is that at least we know what's probably going to win the poll when it comes up for what song the loser has do in the predictions video.
Well, it's mercifully short. So yeah. We'll just have to do it three times in a row. You'd have to do it three times in a row.
Yeah, it's this or Lacey Evans' theme song is what I'm thinking at the moment.
Well, we've already covered the main event, but it was more from a Kofi side of things. So we'll just go through a little bit of the match itself. It was really good before the Bryan and Kofi stuff. Samoa Joe and Daniel Bryan started off the match, which really is the only thing I would change. I'm not saying it was bad because I like the way it played out, and that shot battle between Joe and Bryan was quite horrific, quite awesomely horrific. Bryan had welts on his chest
within like 5 minutes of this match starting,
and they stayed until the end.
Yeah. He's got a great chest for that,
Daniel Bryan. Really good hue to the colour. Not as good as Sheamus's, but you want to be paler to make that red pop.
Yeah.
But I just don't see the reason for having Joe start this match. Because Joe's character very much lends itself to leave him until the end and he comes out and destroys everyone for a bit.
That's the Randy Orton spot, mate.
Well, at least have him as the second to last entry. Kofi Kingston's character, and the way the story was told on Tuesday, entirely lends itself to starting matches and running till the end.
See, I thought this as well, but I figure it's because they did that spot in the women's match, because they ended with the two teams they started with. So I guess that they didn't want to do that again for the men's chamber of starting with Bryan and Kofi and ending with Bryan and Kofi, because it's Control-C, Control-V. So I guess that's why they did it.
Although, stop them elsewhere.
If that is me Pritchard-ing this situation and saying that's why they did it, then change the women's match then. Yeah. Do a different one there.
Yeah, because you look at like what's got more upside, having Fire and Desire start that match and end the match in the women's chamber, or have Kofi go all the way, make it a really like neat story compared to how the Gauntlet match was, and then ending the match to get like the chamber match together.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't get that at all. I think it would have been a lot more effective with Kingston. But we got this great Joe and Bryan stuff, which was really...
It was awesome.
Like it felt like a throwback to 10 years
totally.
Ago.
Totally. It really was. It was Ring of Honor all over again.
Just run through some good spots. Kofi did this amazing sort of leapfrog over the turnbuckle to get onto the top of a pod where Bryan was hiding. And then he chases him across the wall and does this hope dive.
Does the Misty plunge.
Yeah, back off the chamber wall, very high up, onto Joe and Bryan. Joe threw himself under him. Like that, Joe took all of that. Like great work from him.
It was really, really cool. Styles got in and he does his moonsault DDT onto Bryan, but also grabs Kofi and hits like a double DDT thing. I think there were a lot of people who were figuring that we were going to continue a Bryan style storyline.
Us included,
But it really doesn't seem that's... if anything, they're going to be going with AJ Randy.
Yes.
Who was it that reported AJ Randy?
I can't remember. Was it Fightful? I can't remember.
I can't remember. But that was the one they said it was going to happen at Mania. And that seems to be the direction they're going if this match is to anything to be believed. Because Randy eliminated Styles from the match.
With an RKO from the springboard position of the Phenomenal Forearm.
I like that you just dragged him down for it.
Yeah.
It looked really,
cool.
Really cool.
And AJ hit a Phenomenal Forearm onto Bryan climbing around the chamber walls as well. Yeah. There's some really cool spots
really
in this
cool
match.
Stuff. Joe was the first person out, though.
That's another thing. Like, I don't get that part of it either.
No.
Like, I feel like Joe's annoyed someone backstage. He's not getting a fair shake of the great work he does as a character and on his promos.
Yeah. Like, he got nothing out of that AJ feud that went on forever. Like, he got, despite the fact that he was really over as a heel, nothing ever came of it. I don't recall anything that he did particularly big in the Royal Rumble. And then he's just been really, really great on TV. But as soon as he gets onto pay-per-view, he's the first out at Survivor Series in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
He's the first person out here. And it's like, and then Jeff comes in and Jeff's out virtually immediately. It's like, well, why didn't Jeff just go out first then?
Yeah, I don't get it. Jeff had a good spot where he hit a swanton bomb off the pod, off the top of the pod, onto AJ Styles, who was draped over the top turnbuckle.
It was better than when he did the poetry in motion and just put all of his weight onto Brian's leg.
Yeah, that was, and Brian sold his leg a little bit afterwards. That was worrying, but seems all okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, Kofi, it was Kofi who hit the Trouble in Paradise on Randy to eliminate Randy. And I thought that was just, that
poetic
that
justice.
Felt nice from the 10 years ago when Kofi was about to break through into the main event. But for whatever reason, he was feuding with Orton, but reportedly, allegedly, Orton said he just didn't want to work with them anymore.
No, he just wanted to put over Legacy instead, which he did by beating them at WrestleMania.
Yeah, so... But that Kofi Trouble in Paradise elimination of Randy, I felt really helped the crowd buy into Kofi for the last 15 minutes, where that excellent stuff we've already talked about had. So, Luke, I don't know if you know, I gave this 5 out of 5.
Really?
Gave it a best of both worlds rating. I thought it was... It had... I always say you've got to have three amazing bits. And you had Kofi, you had the inaugural women's title win, and you had the Becky segment.
Mm.
And you got Finn Balor as champion as well. I really enjoyed the show. I really enjoyed the Usos match too. The only massive, complete botch, really, was that Corbin-Strowman match, which I'm willing to look past.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I'd have gone 4 out of 5. Mm. I thought it was a great purview. Because I loved both of the opening matches and I loved the Becky segment, but I thought that sort of everything in between that, I was like the lovely like sandwich bits of your bread. So I thought some of the filling wasn't as nice as it possibly should have been. Every time I was buying into it, I'm like, oh, this bread is delicious, but oh, this filling's a bit
empty.
It's a bit bland.
Yeah.
It's a bit nothing to this.
And something's gone off.
And I feel like my time is being wasted. Mm. So I'd have gone great purview. Just around those opening two matches, or at least Bayley and Banks winning, the three bits that you mentioned. But I thought that a lot of it was a bit draggy and a bit pointless.
You've got the final scores there. So for our predictions, you had 3. Correct.
I got 3 out of. Oh. I got 3 correct, and you and Laurie both got 5.
Mm-hmm.
That puts me on 8 points overall for Wrestle League. You on 11, and Laurie on 13. And so. I mentioned earlier that I talked myself out of going with Baron Corbin and I talked myself out of going with Bobby Lashley. Even if I had gone those, I'd still be last. Mm. Like, I have had a dreadful run of this in 2019. I'm on a poor run of form at the moment.
We're only 2 shows in. Still at least 3 to go.
Well, that also includes, like, Rumble I did very badly with. I did bad with TakeOver Phoenix Wright.
Yeah,
I did bad with NXT UK TakeOver as well. Impact Homecoming I did brilliantly with. That almost saved me, really, because my run of form has been diabolical as of late.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.